got to get into. They were already getting into his grandmother's Buick Regal. So I did the next best thing. I unbuttoned my pants and decided to take a driving tour of the western suburbs. And that, my little pumpkins, is how a dude in a dress and a runaway slave happened upon Civil War days. When we initially drove past the field full of tents and campfires in the middle of downtown, my first thought was, white people will go camping anywhere. Then, spying the hoop skirts and Confederate flags peppering the crowd, I told Amy to turn the truck around right now. As we drove past the second time, two young soldiers in homemade Union uniforms were walking down the sidewalk, rifles slung low across their backs. We obviously needed to park the truck. I started humming Lift Every Voice and Sing as I got a couple of bottles of water out of her trunk, and Amy readied her camera for our long journey back to 1862. Being away from the city is terrifying to me. I am not comfortable being around people who homeschool their children and sew their own clothing, and I am never doing that ever again. I was for real afraid for my life. I also really don't understand this fascination some people have with going back in time. Why in the world would I want to sit around in 9 layers of dark wool on an 80-degree day, sweating into my beard as I pretend to be Robert E. Lee at Antietam, when in the present there are iPhones and air conditioning? Well, I guess sometimes you just want to call a woman a nigger in the middle of Main Street, but that's just you. You'll never catch me spending a week in the wilderness trying to get back to nature or whatever, especially not when I have an apartment and a bed and a refrigerator and my freedom. There's nothing glamorous to me about sleeping outside or drinking from a different water fountain, particularly when circumstances don't require it. Seriously, do you Starbucks drinking people know a single person who cures his own meats? No, you don't, because in this day and age, that shit is not necessary. What is this thing people have with pretending they want to go back to when doctors did surgery with 2 sticks and a roll of jute? I like technology. I love medical advancements. I would rather be dead than dress up like Little Bo Peep on a Saturday afternoon to chase diaper-clad babies named Malachi and cook food over a trash barrel that has been fashioned into some sort of old-timey grill by putting a Bunsen burner inside. We walked up and down this stretch of sidewalk for half an hour, gawking through the chain-link fence at your grandfather and the rest of the infantry getting their musketoons and artillery swords ready for the next battle, all while trying to inconspicuously take their photographs. They caught me looking every single time, and I had to pin my freedom papers to my shirt just to keep them from tackling me at the waist and forcing me to braid their children's hair. Amy and I were making fun of a life-size rendering of Abraham Lincoln made out of mayonnaise, pretty sure, when someone straight out of an episode of Little House on the Prairie appeared from out of nowhere and stood there scrutinizing us. She was wearing a long-sleeve plaid dress with a pinafore, a petticoat, a bonnet, leather, and held a woven basket with both arms. I waited for her to appraise the width of my hips and ask if she could get a look at my teeth, but she didn't. Instead, she said, "Your necklace is pretty intense." I was wearing this necklace I got on Etsy, a coyote mandible hanging from a chain that I only wear when I need to feel edgy and cool. And while she might have had a point, this broad was dressed like fucking Florence Nightingale. I was like, "Honey, you are wearing a hoop skirt in 2013. She stormed off, probably to soak a pig carcass in saltpeter or make coffee out of okra seeds. Amy and I drove through the rest of downtown, which pretty much looks like downtown everywhere else. A Gap and a Talbot's and lots of little adorable places for your mother to put antique sugar bowls on her house charge and eat overpriced crab salads. From there, we drove out through a bunch of subdivisions and new developments And it was so insanely children of the corny that I was almost afraid to ride with the windows down for fear someone would reach in with a scythe and slice me to death. So many churches, so many blank blue eyes drinking in our close-cropped city hair and head-to-toe black outfits in disbelief. I was exhausted by the time we got to the reception, which was at this beautiful restaurant that had been dressed up like the ballroom in Cinderella. And even though we'd fought the Battle of Vicksburg and survived, we somehow were still too early and had to stand in the parking lot waiting for the only people of color other than me and Stink Eye to open the doors. We didn't really have to stand outside, I guess, but I hate to be the first big bitch in a room full of food, so hovering awkwardly near Amy's truck was what it was gonna be. I am not going to be the asshole who has a bib tucked into her shirt and is pulling a chair up to the hors d'oeuvres while people are wandering in looking for the gift table with their starter glasses of champagne. Whenever I walk into a room like that, I think, I'm going to ruin this tablecloth or break this chair before I even get a chance to set my purse down. It took us approximately an hour and a half to find the little placard with my name stenciled on it, and I said a silent prayer to Horace that this dude hadn't messed up and sat me with his parents' ancient golf buddies or something. I already almost got called a nigger once that day. No need to tempt fate. Since we were among the first people in, we were the absolute first people in line at the bar, and the cocktail hour sangria was flowing. The bartender handed me a plastic cup full of green apple chunks, and I paused, paralyzed by the memory of my sister's wedding, with its either buy drink tickets or suck down tap water all night theme. Then Amy elbowed me in the ribs to get me moving. "It's free," she whispered, balancing three cups in one hand and pulling my shirt with the other. Everywhere we turned, someone was shoving a tray loaded with crostini and olive tapenade or bacon-wrapped dates in our faces. I hate olives, but I love fancy wedding food. So between the two of us, we probably consumed an entire pig and wiped out every olive in the Mediterranean. Seriously, I had toothpicks sticking out of all my pockets. I had to hide them under my chair before anyone noticed the amount of food we'd eaten was greater than what I'd spent on the gift I'd purchased from the low end of their registry. I had bet Amy at the church, is "Thou shalt not make pointless wagers" one of the commandments, that we'd be at the same table as the other black people at the party. But they were seated at the table across from ours, just close enough that I could barely make out the bulging vein in Brenda's forehead as she glared at me in the romantic candlelight. I wanted to shout, "Look, I just survived typhoid pneumonia and the Battle of Gettysburg to be here and eat these tapas. Lay the fuck off." But my mouth was way too full of Manchego cheese. Amy and I got put at the fun table, the one full of hip single people who did not speak to us, save for this trio of drunk bachelors who were hilarious and asking questions, all except, "Are you guys a couple?" Because, duh, they were polite and have manners, but you know that's the only question they really wanted to ask. Dinner was equally delicious. A bunch of really good hot and cold dishes that they served family style, which caused me a great deal of agita. But what can you do? People waiting for me to serve myself from a communal food dish stresses me out. I took a quarter of what I'd normally eat, then watched wistfully as the platter circled the table. You could tell how much the bride's parents loved her by the quality of the food. Seriously, as we passed all of the gleaming fresh seafood trays and steaming bowls of chicken with artichokes, I couldn't help but think, I bet she got really good grades in high school. Plus, we were sitting so close to the top-shelf open bar that I could pretty much serve myself. At one point, my boy came over to thank us for wolfing down his free food while making fun of his friends, and I was like, way to have only three black people at the party, David Duke. He laughed and said, I almost put you guys at the same table, but I thought it would have been too obvious. It was a good thing he didn't, because at that exact moment, I glanced over to where old girl and her man were waiting in the cake line, and she glowered at me once again. I was like, who is that lady and what is her deal? Is this about her man? Because I can just go over there right now and tell her that I'm not feeling, dude, and she can keep her dirty looks to herself. The last thing I ever want is a dude who is some other woman's problem, because one, I'm not a hater, and two, I don't need a bitch playing on my phone all night. Can't we all just get along? The big band in the corner started playing Cheek to Cheek, and I took that as our cue to leave. We gave daps to the frat brothers at our table and took our customized cupcakes to go. People were lingering on the lawn outside the ballroom, chatting amiably about travel hockey and hating vaccines and other white things. We made our way to the parking lot where men with stock portfolios clapped one another on the back and compared BMW interiors. It wasn't even dark yet, but Amy pulled her dress over her head, showering the gravel below with sequins from 1995. She shimmied into her cargo pants and a plaid shirt as I painstakingly rolled my damp, expensive shapewear down over my lumps and bumps. I tossed it on the dashboard to dry out during the ride home and was circling around to the trunk to get my flip-flops to relieve my smashed toes when I saw it. A faded Bush Cheney sticker on the back of Jerome's grandma's Buick. I hobbled over and cupped my hands to peer in the window in the fading daylight. A Walgreens bag with Flamin' Hots and a can of olive oil sheen spray sat on the back seat. Hello, Nemesis. I get it now, I called out to Amy, who was sitting on her bumper packing a bowl for the ride home. They're Republicans. They hate us queers. I wondered what the two of them had done during our intermission. Enacted some legislation against impoverished children, or maybe strip some black people of their right to vote? It's too bad they'd gotten away from us. I would have died to see their reactions back at Fort Sumter. Amy's engine roared to life behind me, and she tapped the horn twice. Come on, Hoss. Let's go find you a drive-through. I took one last look inside the car, a Tim McGraw CD, really, and patted the hood. I climbed awkwardly into the truck and tried to find something good on the radio. Amy placed a cigarette between her teeth and passed the bowl across the seat to me. Should I ram it? She nodded toward their car. I shook my head and cranked up the music, remembering a quote from fake Abraham Lincoln on this old episode of Star Trek, marathons of which I used to watch on Channel 9 in the summer when I was little because I didn't have any friends and I never went outside. There's no honorable way to kill, no gentle way to destroy. There's nothing good in war except its ending. Mavis. I had ripped the tender flesh on my finger, trying to open a piece of mail that wasn't even fucking mine. A fancy wedding invitation on creamy heavyweight cardstock, intended for some girl named Alicia who lived downstairs in apartment 209. Blood splattered across the velvety envelope while I raced frantically around my kitchen, sucking my finger and snatching open drawers in search of your grandma's favorite adhesive bandages, the thick, stretchy fabric kind that conformed to every wrinkly crevice. I am not OCD. I'm really not. Like, if I buy peaches, it is almost 100% guaranteed that a week later, my kitchen will be humming with the low drone of 10,000 fruit flies. I bought this adorable fruit bowl, and I put peaches in it because I like peaches. But then I probably got distracted by a gyro or some old chili, and before you know it, a plague of tiny bugs is feasting on my rotten $7.98 a pound Whole Foods white peaches. That would not happen to a meticulous person. I mean, really, sometimes I don't even wipe that good. But if I have a bandage on my finger and am forced by crushing poverty and ever-mounting debt out into the real world to earn a living, I become fixated on it, watching its crisp, pristine edges wilt and dampen throughout the day, holding back vomit while handling customer credit cards and loose change speckled with influenza. I watch it grow loose and dirty throughout the day, even though I changed it 4 times before lunch, repulsed by its fraying edge as I raise my hands to mock some dumb asshole with a well-timed air quote. It's fucking disgusting. My and Mavis's modern romance had begun the same way as so many passionate love affairs before it, on fucking Twitter. Her initial tweet to me had read something like this, "Reading your book and never want to stop," which is incredibly humbling and flattering and all those silly blush words. And who knows, I probably sent back a bunch of heart with the arrow through it emojis or something. She responded, and our fledgling courtship took off. Two modern girls falling in lust or something, one trending favorite at a time. We move the conversation to DM, and I really need you guys to know that it physically pains me to both have participated in something called a DM and to recount what happened in one for you now. Don't get me wrong. I love giant computer phones and talking cars and vaccines, but hashtagging and retweets make me motherfucking hashtag crazy. I can't follow that shit. Dude, I still have a house phone and one of those old-timey answering machines that goes gurgle, scramble, gargle as you rewind the tape after listening to the customer service representative at ComEd, whose tone suggests that the $42.73 I am past due came from her account personally, express her shock and disbelief that I have an actual answering machine. Mavis and I talked about dresses and my favorite brand of matte lip stains, and when I asked for book recommendations, she sent me 19, give or take a few. The Book of Unknown Americans was really good, by the way. Then she asked me to mail her a letter. When we first met in person, I knew immediately that she wanted to slurp me up like the finest cup of cold brewed, pour over Ethiopian coffee $9 could buy. I'm not sure exactly when things changed. We sent a handful of cards back and forth, mine handmade and purchased from Etsy because I'm twee like that. Our text shifted from informational to conversational, to something bordering on intimate, and then there she was, lithe and lean and carrying a baby cactus to meet me for a bumbling and awkward first lunch. A lunch during which she housed a giant plate of huevos rancheros and potatoes and sausages in a matter of seconds. I mean, she wolfed down her food with such ferocity that I felt my pants go damp. I love people who love eating. Mavis was tall and skinny, and I could tell at a glance that she's the do-gooder kind of white people. Vegan earth shoes and woven Mayan handbag and the kind of hair you get from using natural products. She listens to Black Star and Public Enemy and eats yard tomatoes that grow behind her house and bakes from-scratch pies and buys multicultural reading material for her children. I am very familiar with this varietal of grape. A few weeks later, Mavis came back to town and got us a room at the Acme Hotel. I don't know, man. I just didn't want our first time to be in my little apartment, pushing the cat off the bed and trying to ignore the drunk college kids puking in the hallway outside my door. Better instead to get busy in a sterile hotel room downtown that looked like something out of a real-world house. Trompe l'oeil paint on the walls, iPhone chargers in the outlets, a glowing red neon lip print on the bathroom mirror in lieu of a nightlight. We drank French 75s, the ingredients for which she'd thoughtfully packed in a cooler. I sipped mine nervously on the far side of the bed, flipping maniacally through the television channels and thinking about how I am never that prepared for anything, ever. I knew her well enough to know that she is not a television person. A multiple-section reader of the Sunday Times? A listener to public radio in her bumper-stickered Volvo? a learned individual courtesy of the BBC or Al Jazeera or some other unbiased non-American and therefore inherently superior news source? Duh, all of those things. But a consumer of day-long pantsless Top Chef marathons? I'm no expert, but I don't think a bitch who makes her own kombucha is the same bitch sitting around in her house bra for hours on end watching old episodes of Roseanne. Because I am that bitch, and kombucha is disgusting. Those people, the no TV, eat at the dinner table, get your news from a reputable source other than Facebook people, are terrifying to me. I have a subscription to Bust, and I read Matt Taibbi's articles in Rolling Stone sometimes, but those people always want to talk about world events, and I'm like, yo, my dude, I don't know shit about Russia. Let's go get some chicken. I don't know anything about the economy. I can barely keep track of who my elected officials are. I hate learning things. Why can't everyone just watch The Voice so we can all have something exciting to talk about? God, I love those battle rounds. So I sat there and watched Middle Eastern explosions on CNN while Mavis busied herself making cocktails and chirping about smart shit. It wasn't until I felt her definitely female fingers fumbling awkwardly with the zipper of my hoodie in that hotel room downtown that it dawned on me. I don't really know how to fuck a lady. My stomach dropped as I tried to recall every article I'd ever read about G-spots and nipple sensitivity, my arms stiffening at my sides as she bent down and pressed her lips into my neck. I assumed it was up to me to do the man stuff because I have a fantasy football team and can grow a full beard, so I just lay there while she did stuff to me, waiting for her to yell at me because I hadn't taken the garbage out. That's how this works, right? I expertly slid my female hand under her bra and unhooked it with the flick of a wrist in one smooth, effortless motion. JK, folks, I wrestled with that clasp like an alligator, finally resorting to the use of a chainsaw in my teeth. "Do some nipple stuff," offered my dumb brain, and I did while peeking at her face to make sure I was getting it right. "I don't know, man. I mean, she didn't recoil or punch me in the side of the head, so I figured I was doing pretty okay. But then I remembered she said her boobs were desensitized from years of having nursed two children, and I promptly removed my mouth because babies." I tried to think of the worst thing boyfriend's past had done in bed with me and actively tried to avoid doing any of that. I peeled off my socks. I hate when dudes wear socks in bed. And asked Mavis if there were any feelings she wanted to talk about before we really got started. "Has anyone in the patriarchy oppressed you lately?" I asked attentively. "Wanna read some stuff on Jezebel?" She launched herself at me, pinning my arms down as she scaled my body like the face of a mountain. I reached for the waistband of her jeans and there it was. In the flickering blue light of the flat screen hanging across from the bed, that old grimy, tattered band-aid loosely affixed to my wounded forefinger. "I don't really know all the rules yet, but I'm pretty sure you aren't allowed to finger a woman while wearing a wilted, unraveling, dirty-ass band-aid." I tried to create enough friction between my sensible yoga pants and the scratchy duvet to slide it off without either tipping her off or starting a brush fire, but that stupid thing wouldn't loosen up. The more furiously I worked at it, the more it wouldn't budge. "Do we really need this on?" she asked, nodding at the television. Even though I wouldn't have minded the dulcet tones of Anderson Cooper serving as the soundtrack to our first officially official coitus, maybe I could learn something about midterm elections through osmosis? I seized the opportunity. Plunged suddenly into darkness, I used my teeth to scrape that nasty band-aid from my finger and tucked it out of sight under my pillow. Then I slid my pale, wrinkled finger inside her vagina, rooting around in there for the rough and spongy G-spot, just like all those magazines had taught me. Vagina dentata. My motherfucking teeth. my $16,000 son of a bitching teeth. That is what I was thinking about when my head moved between Mavis's thighs, pretending to know what I was about to start doing. The carefully sculpted, realistic-looking crowns affixed to the dead stumps of hollowed-out bone jutting raggedly from the receding gum tissue inside my head. The hours and hours and hours spent horizontal beneath blinding lights as the dentist jammed a pickaxe between my pulsating molars and went after my eye teeth with an old-timey saw. The 10-inch needles piercing through my skull, crammed into my sinus cavity, wedged into softened, bloody tissue already vibrant with excruciating pain. Ugh, this is fucking Coldplay, I think, as I try to figure out a sexy way to tell her to scoot her butt forward so that she's positioned right under my chin without dislocating my goddamn elbow in the process. Now this hoe knows I have embarrassingly mainstream taste in sex music. Inch your butt up, sister, I say, patting her haunch like a horse, just like at the gynie. Eating pussy is easier than you'd think. I learned on the job, and I'm really quite good at it. Sometimes my disabled ass gets the angle wrong, and I'm, like, sucking on a wet dreadlock or whatever, but for the most part, I just sort of put my face where it feels like it should go and let my tongue do what comes naturally. It's sort of like licking the inside of someone's mouth, except there's hair and no teeth, and you have to be really careful not to disembowel your girl with your wanton incisors. The first time was in daylight, and I really inspected everything up close, but in a sexy way, so she wouldn't feel like her labia were in a petri dish or something. And then, I don't know, I just licked it like you would an ice cream cone. A soft serve one, though, because sometimes you gotta get a little rough with the regular kind and use your teeth on the chunks or use your lips really hard to mold it into a lickable shape. Sometimes I use my nose or my chin, and really I don't think she can tell the motherfucking difference. The fingering was easy to master because I basically just do what I do to myself when the vibrator's out of batteries, while intermittently trying to feel what she had for breakfast from the inside. That part is easy. I was doing the Jay-Z brush your shoulders off dance by the third time we got busy, as Mavis was seeing stars and catching the Holy Ghost while having orgasm after orgasm. I thought it might take some time for me to get good at cunnilingus, but nah, I just get a supportive pillow for my neck, I'm old, and get all up in that soft serve. I've always been above average at sucking a D, probably because I am the kind of person who excels at alone tasks rather than thriving in a group project. Like, I just want to make the diorama the way I want to make it, okay, Miss Mittman? Then I know the shit will be right. So when I'm down there, face to open face, medium rare roast beef sandwich, picture it, it's important for me to do a good job. I never much enjoyed being eaten out by dudes. One would slowly make his way down there, burdened by obligation, and I would literally clam up. I'm smelly, I'm hairy, I've got enough yeast in there to make dinner rolls. Just stick it in my butthole and hurry up so we won't miss our dinner reservation. But Mavis understands that my nose-searing musk is nature's self-cleaning oven, just handling her business. And that coarse mouthful of hair I'm serving is payback for never having received my reparations when Obama was elected. 149.95. The year I turned 34, I decided to buy my vagina her first grown-up lady sex toy, a Lilo Mona 2 from the Pleasure Chest, more expensive than the most expensive thing in my closet. It's the Cadillac of vibrators, with its velvety silicone curved for the G-spot and its multitude of settings and speeds. And worth every penny, as one time I had Mavis lying on her side and was banging her with it and she was caterwauling like a crazy person, then squirted for the first time ever, So hard and so much that it splashed on the goddamn cat. That is fucking amazing. I always thought I would eventually end up with a woman. Men are too taxing, too mischievous, too restless, too naughty. And I don't want to spend my Chico's years with my stomach tied in an anxiety knot waiting for a dude to leave me for someone younger. The idea of spending my Social Security checks fussing over some goddamn man has never appealed to me. I want afternoons spent shouting at the television set with my best friend in our matching house sweaters and magnifying readers from Costco. I have always been sexually attracted to both men and women, although the sex part is more of an afterthought for me. My compatibility checklist is full of very important qualifications like leaves me alone while I watch my shows, doesn't leave globs of toothpaste in the sink, would never finish the ice cream without checking with me first, understands that I don't like to touch while sleeping, isn't an asshole to the cat, and so on. I understand my limits and my deficits, and I know that to get through life with some relative degree of happiness, we have to find someone who can figure out the taxes or make the lunches or whatever it is we aren't good at doing. I don't need a charming person with a good sense of humor who specializes in getting extensions on the cable bill. I got that covered. I need someone who balances a checkbook and remembers when her last tetanus shot was. I get tired. I work 50 hours a week, man. I wear compression stockings and orthopedic shoes, and most nights I fall asleep in the middle of my dinner. So when Mavis is nudging me in the ribs at 9 p.m., elbowing me in the kidneys to get me out of my end-of-day coma, it makes me feel like an asshole. My body wants to say, look, bitch, I am tired, but my brain is all, be grateful someone wants to see a body with this many varicose veins naked. And my brain is right. I do have a lot of weird moles and shit. Halfway into the kissing, I usually realize that I've made the wrong decision, that I just should have stayed asleep and woken her up at 3 a.m. with 20 passionate minutes of finger sex. But then I remember the Lilo. Sure, it feels like cheating, reaching for that smooth piece of silicone on the charger next to the bed. But then, as I am the drooling, semi-unconscious Big Spoon, working my multi-speed robot penis while Little Spoon is none the wiser, I think to myself, worth every goddamn cent. This is what wearing a harness is like. I felt like to really commit to the lesbian thing, we had to get ourselves a strap on. That it wouldn't be really real until I'd awkwardly tried to have hands-free penis sex. So I did some research, meaning I read 2 short articles on the internet, then decided to make a purchase. First of all, I had to go into early to bed and ask for the plus-size kind, which was weird because I made it weird, not because they did. The woman at the counter handed me a plastic bag filled with what looked like a tangled mess of black jump ropes. She asked me if I wanted to try it on, and I just stood there, dumbfounded, flushing scarlet as I imagined this young woman helping me navigate all those hooks and pulleys, trying to get my angry joints through the right holes. Also, it was like 3 p.m, and I'm not sure what my baby parts smelled like, and please just give it to me in an unmarked plastic bag, okay? I chose a large lavender penis, smooth silicone with a curved tip and a couple of soft ridges, paid for it and the harness, then promptly hid them in my closet for 3 months. Mostly because I'm lazy, and everything I read on the internet about fucking someone with a strap on said I would need to practice, while also subtly hinting that I could probably stand to be in better shape to provide the most fulfilling sexual experience. What would Helen Keller be doing while I was tiptoeing around my apartment with my big plastic penis waggling between my legs? Or worse, while I was simulating doggy style on a pillow while standing next to the bed? The one time I took everything out of the packaging to practice assembling it, I walked out of the room for half a second and came back to find the goddamn cat hugging and kicking the dildo while gnawing on its head. "Put my dick down," I yelled, swatting at her with the edge of a blanket as she continued scratching up my new penis. "Put my motherfucking dick down." I've watched enough porn to know how to do it, at least in theory. I was especially anxious to try that move where you mount the lady from behind and push her head down so she won't notice you're reaching for that last piece of bed pie you left on the nightstand for a snack. I wasn't so sure about the other positions. Missionary? Boring. Also, I'm a heavy person who has a real fear of collapsing a skinny person's lungs beneath the weight of my tits or whatever. Also, the idea that I would have to do something with my face other than grimace and excruciating pain is the worst. Girl on top. Fine. But again, I would be thinking a lot about what's happening on my face, which would be a direct reflection of what was happening with my strapped-on member. So, mostly nothing. Spooning. Well, now, this sounds lovely and nice. Like cuddling, but more intrusive. But I would for sure go to sleep. Guaranteed. Especially because this asshole is always trying to serve me wine with dinner and then put the moves on me. What else even is there? Seriously, do men have to think this goddamn hard? On dildo night, Mavis cooked dinner at the lake house in South Haven. Salmon, rice, bok choy, and these purple green beans from the farmer's market that turn green after you cook them. Miniature lemon chess pies. Bourbon. Glasses of wine. This was going to be an event. We crawled into bed afterward, queuing up that Denzel drunk pilot movie on the iPad, and I was asleep within 30 seconds, not even kidding. Mavis nudged me awake with a rolled-up New Yorker, peering at me disgustedly over her reading glasses, hair tied up in its bedtime topknot. Seriously? You're just going to sleep? And at that moment, I turned into every chubby sitcom dad on every show you've ever watched while picking at the peas on your dinner plate. Nope. I rolled out of the bed and into the bathroom to change into my night caftan, this gauzy black thing that your Aunt Susan lent me, and that I think is pretty sexy, but I'm probably totally wrong about. I tore open the nondescript plastic pouch the harness came in, slipped my penis through the rubber O-ring attached to the back plate, and secured it at the base. Once I was satisfied that it was firmly in place, I stepped awkwardly through the nylon leg loops, then pulled the loose ends through the backpack strap fasteners to tighten them under my butt meat. Mavis looked on, unimpressed. This is worse than waiting for some flaccid dude to get his dick hard. I connected and tightened the top strap and immediately started giggling because my nipples fucking got caught in that shit and I had to, like, free them. I don't know what the fuck I was picturing. I mean, I guess I thought it would be like a horn sticking out of my stomach or something, but the fabric backing molded to my mom's pubis and the dick dangled between my legs like, well, like an actual dick, except purple and silicone and unlikely to require Plan B. "It feels weird," I said, frozen, standing next to the bed like an idiot. I lay on my back and she straddled me, grunting as she struggled to jam my huge member into a vagina that had clearly dried up while watching me fool around with all of those stupid levers and pulleys. I circled my hips and laughed while she humped me, feeling nothing below my waist other than a leg cramp that, with my luck, was probably a blood clot. She dismounted moments later, her smoking inner thighs smelling like a Barbie doll someone had set on fire. "That was dumb," I whined. "Let's just eat some more pie." She emailed me her feelings about the whole thing afterward, because that is what some ladies do. If you really want to know the truth, and this gets all mushy, but it's real, the longer we're together, the more emotionally intimate and committed we get, the more I want that intimacy and connection during sex. Not all the time. It doesn't always have to be fingers laced, intense eye contact, weeping afterward sex, but I love that we can and do have that. And the strap-on isn't that, at least not yet. And it's also not yet just fun taboo banging. We're not skilled enough at it for that. So we've got to practice if we want to get there. And we have such limited time, it's hard to see strap-on expertise becoming our sexual priority. Not saying I want to stop playing around with it or try one myself, just giving you a little glimpse into my heart. Oh, brother, all these feelings. This is the part I found I'm less good at. All the processing we have to do. All the thinking and the feeling and the talking that is required. Licking her asshole? Not a problem, bro. I just held my breath and did it until I thought she was gonna shit in my mouth, and then I backed off. Talking about my emotions for an hour after I just put in 37 minutes of really taxing physical labor? Problem. I'm not one of these Neanderthals who pretends I was hatched before having fully developed the feelings part of my brain, but talking about them all the time is exhausting. I can't just pat her on the back and say, good job, sister. I have to stare into her eyes and tell her how much these experiences move me. And I have tried, but I can't stop laughing. And that shit is rude. Couldn't she have just said, meh, your sex game is whack, while rolling over to fetch her nighttime-specific hand cream and reading materials from the library? Why we gotta be all heart-glimpsing about it? Man, having a penis has turned me into such a dick. Fuck it, bitch. Stay fat. I mean, isn't this what we really want to do anyway? Because we already know how one loses weight. Eat less and exercise more. Or get surgery. Why are we still playing around with the Oreo diet? Or the whole milk and unpasteurized cheese diet, or the diet where you still get to eat a pound of pasta? Either you're ready to eat vegetables and get on a treadmill, or you are not. And I'm ready. I just lost 5 pounds, and here's how. For 2 weeks, I quit drinking booze and soda, and I stopped eating dessert. I didn't exercise. Someone, please tell me how you fit heart rate-raising exercise into a schedule that includes working a real job and trying to get a good night's sleep. But I tried to set reasonable goals like don't order one meat on top of another meat at lunch. Dieting is crazy and turns most of us jerks into insufferable babies. Either, one, you're a crabby asshole on the verge of tears all day long because you're desperate for a handful of Cheetos, or two, you're perched atop a high horse made of fewer than 1,200 daily calories, glaring down your nose at me and pointing out how much saturated fat is in my unsweetened iced tea. Man, don't you hate a fat skinny bitch more than anything else on the planet? You know who I mean. Your friend who used to eat mayonnaise straight from the jar, but who recently lost 20 pounds doing Whole30 because she was going through a midlife crisis and is now suddenly an expert on health and nutrition, totally qualified to rip the corn dog out of your greasy little clutches. Holy shit, shut up, girl. Can't we all just decide that if you're over the age of 28, you don't have to worry about being skinny anymore? Thin is a young woman's game, and I'm perfectly happy to chill on the bench this quarter with a chili dog. And if I happen to burn a few calories while texting, then great. Now, let's not be crazy. Should you work out? Of course you should. But you don't need some magazine intern clucking at you from behind the computer screen about taking a jog around the block every once in a while. It doesn't even have to be hard. Just go to Curves a few times a week and trade a couple of meals a day for some Special K or a salad, but not the meat and cheese kind. And drink water to make your belly feel full and distract you from how much you would die for a Dove bar. Also, running to the bathroom all the time has to qualify as minimal cardiovascular exercise. The hard part isn't the knowing what to do, it's the doing. I just had a yogurt. It had 150 calories in it and 2 grams of fat. I wrote it down in a little notebook full of lies that I keep in my backpack to motivate myself to try to eat better. In theory, that notebook is supposed to hold me accountable for all my food choices so that I can get on a path to better eating. In reality, I willfully ignore its existence every time someone brings a pizza to the office, or the nights my friends coax me out to the bar, or the entire week I spent in L.A. pretending I didn't just vow to end my love affair with cheese. I know what I'm supposed to do. I just need someone to tell me how, every single day until I die. Seriously, though, every woman in America is probably an expert on health and exercise based solely upon her subscription to Self magazine. Do you really need another article about how important it is to eat a big breakfast full of healthy fats and whole grains to curb afternoon snacking? No, you do not. You need bitches to write about how comfortable maternity jeans are for women who aren't really pregnant, and sexy ways to remove a bra that has 4 hooks. I'm always amused when they encourage you to eat instead foods, like eating an apple when you really want to rub a bacon cheeseburger all over your boobs is a fair substitute. Why not instead list which ice creams have the least calories by the pint? Oh, sure. You can tell a woman just to run 5 miles and take up crafting after she gets dumped by some asshole and her friends won't call her back because they're tired of listening to her dissect every single aspect of their relationship. Do you think we'd still be together if I hadn't hated on that Flight of the Conchords show in 2009? But she'd much prefer knowing whether an entire pint of Talenti has fewer calories than one of Häagen-Dazs. That's an instead a girl could really go for. Dale. I became legitimately obsessed with Zumba before the grinding of bone on bone in my knees made it impossible to enjoy. Obsessed. Even though I am wary of most forms of physical activity, including sex. It all started when I had taken some files to the kennel area of the hospital and found all of the techs and assistants gathered open-mouthed around the giant flat-screen computer monitor that hangs in the treatment area. They were watching a YouTube video where an upbeat Latinx woman in sherbet-colored workout gear stood in front of a dance studio full of gorgeous, scantily clad 30-somethings in clingy dancewear, leading them in choreographed salsa-light dance moves. "What are they doing?" I asked Betty. She rolled her eyes and was like, "This is Zumba, Sam," like I was the asshole for not knowing. I thought Zumba was a region in Mexico. I shrugged, starting to walk away so I wouldn't inadvertently step in dog puke or get sprayed by anal glands, then did a double take. "Wait a minute, are they dancing to Pitbull?" I shoved Betty out of the way, tossed the files on the floor, "Sorry, animals," and started to cha-cha and shake my jelly along with the sexy young things in the video. Pitbull makes me want to take my pants off. We painfully mimicked that video 3 times, and by the end I was sweaty and hoarse from screaming "Damelo" at the top of my lungs for 20 minutes. I signed up for a class the very next day. Working out is a bummer. Walking on a treadmill for 45 minutes while listening to the same Metallica playlist over and over and trying to read the closed captioning of a television show you don't even care about is a total drag. The elliptical machine makes uncoordinated people like me look stupid. The stair machine reduces mere mortals to tears within 4 minutes. The stationary bike feels like uncomfortable butt sex. Who wants to put the Twinkies down and get out of bed for any of that? I'm not sure that I have even once experienced the shot of endorphins surging through your body that is supposed to occur when you're exercising, unless I didn't recognize it because it feels the same as a heart attack or vomiting up your breakfast onto the sparkling white gym shoes you bought because flip-flops are frowned upon at the gym. A couple of months ago, my vegan Russian trainer moved to Hawaii so she could run ultramarathons in a temperate climate and mack on girls in grass skirts. At first I was sad, but then I thought, now there will be no one to scowl disapprovingly at my attempted push-ups. Hooray! During our last training session, right after I'd completed 7 of the 50 sit-ups she'd asked me to do, she said, "You are my most disappointing client." And I interpreted that as, this tiny human says it's okay for me to keep eating red meat and cupcakes in bed. Good talk. We did some partner stretches, and after she adjusted my knee for the 4th time, she said, "I worry about you. We are going to text after I move." I nodded in agreement while my brain said, "Fine, joke's on you. Texts don't have eyes." A week after she left, I got a text from the Russian. The Russian: "What's for lunch?" Me: "Lean cuisine." The Russian: "And what?" Me: "Water." The Russian: "And what?" Me, breaking into a liar sweat: "Oxygen?" The Russian: "What else?" I could hear her shouting in my brain. Me, still trying to be on that bullshit: "Granola bar?" The Russian: "You're lying." Me: "Okay, okay, you caught me. A granola bar and an apple." The Russian: ... Me: "And a Diet Coke?" The Russian: ... Me: "Oh, and I had half a donut this morning." The Russian: ... Me: "Okay, fine. A whole donut." The Russian: ... Me, sighing at my screen: "2 donuts." The Russian: ... Me: "And I might have also had a beer before work." The Russian: "I hate you." I'm not going to lie and say that I started caring about myself, because for real, I mostly don't. But at some point, I was just like, yo, I do not move, and I'm not old enough to get away with that yet. I'm lazy and research is boring, but I got on the internet anyway to try to find out whatever I could about this Zumba torture I was about to subject myself to. "Ditch the workout and join the party," the official website shouted at my eyeballs. Zumba is the only Latin-inspired dance fitness program that blends red-hot international music and contagious steps to form a fitness party that is downright addictive. I am suspicious of words like addictive and contagious, and I immediately blanched while clicking through all the pictures of lean and toned soccer moms gyrating in crop tops and neon bicycle shorts, their perfect bodies beaded with sweat, their toothy, open-mouthed grin screaming, "I am having the time of my young and conventionally attractive life." I am a negative person by nature, and I typically shy away from anything that requires me to be having visible fun. I like to do stuff that I can sit quietly in the back and enjoy, and I've spent my entire adult life perfecting a bored yet slightly amused and entertained facade. And I just don't understand being excited about exercise. It's like doing a cartwheel on your way to have a root canal. My face just doesn't light up at the prospect of abdominal isolations. Also, the pictures. Look at that instructor guy with his shirt off. I'm not trying to embarrass myself tripping over my feet doing watered-down salsa steps while some red-hot international instructor rolls his eyes at me in disgust and bounces quarters off his ridiculously chiseled backside. The Sunday morning of my first class, I got up and put on socks and my old New Balances while remaining in my pajamas. I can't compete with these jerks doing a revolutionary new fitness concept while wearing bikini tops, so I decided it was in the best interest of my self-esteem to go to the opposite end of the clothing spectrum and just look like absolute trash. Because even if I busted my melon open while trying to cumbia to the beat, at least my jibs would be appropriately covered. I took 37 Aleve and a Norco and tried to inconspicuously stretch my Achilles on the train platform so it wouldn't snap in the middle of a routine. When I got to the gym, I paid the $15 drop-in fee and found my way up to the dance studio. I hovered nervously near the back of the gym, anxious for all the J-Lo lookalikes to start pouring in and making me feel bad about that container of Greek yogurt I'd eaten in the locker room. And then your mom came in, wearing booty shorts and the shirt she wears to wash the dishes, flanked on either side by your Aunt Judy and your recently retired fifth grade teacher. Her sewing circle showed up next, as did her crochet buddies and all the ladies from book club, with the exception of Kathy, whose son had strep, so she decided to stay home with him. There's the woman who cuts your mom's hair, and Diane, who works part-time at Eileen Fisher in the mall. The school board ladies, the PTA, and the hockey moms came running in too, clad in biker shorts and racerback tanks with their hair pulled up in banana clips and scrunchies. I don't know what I had been so worried about. I thought this was for attractive young people, I wondered aloud to no one in particular. A lady down the way looked me up and down. Yeah, she said, eyeing my flabby triceps and pulling a protein bar from her fanny pack. Me too. The music started, and our teacher, a boisterous woman who was wearing a sports bra and a noisy coin skirt, whose constant jangling set my molars on fire, started shouting and dancing and pointing out people who sucked as we tried desperately to follow along. I was winded after the first song, and 20 minutes in, I told the woman struggling next to me to call me an ambulance. I was sweating in the grossest possible way, sweat dripping from my hair into my eyelashes before rolling down my nose. Your mom is pretty good at Zumba, but thank goodness she ain't got no rhythm. The only thing that kept me from looking like a complete moron was my blackness, which kicked in right when I needed it most. I might not have gotten every single step, but at least I wasn't clapping on the one and the three. Despite the fact that I really did almost keel over and die, I was hooked. It is physically impossible for me to smile while skipping and jumping and fist pumping, but I loved it. Thumping loud music at 9:30 on a Sunday morning in a room full of wasps who are coming down off a Chardonnay bender? More, please. These ladies yelled and whooped and screamed for an hour. Then they toweled off and hopped in their Lexus SUVs to congregate over skinny lattes at the Starbucks two streets over. The minute that first class was finished, I vomited my right lung onto the locker room floor, then went downstairs and signed over half my paycheck to become an official member of the gym. It was, quote-unquote, fun. My heart rate was high enough to make me feel like an actual sentient human being. And, for your information, Ricky Martin made a lot of good dance music, so bite your hateful tongue. And it's lame knowing that I need the withering gaze of your hot-flashed, perimenopausal mother to get me to samba my way to maybe living past the age of 39, but admitting defeat is the first step, right? I live in fear of the day I go flying off a moving treadmill, but pretending I can bachata to Gloria Estefan for an hour is something I can do. Plus, your mom said she would bake me gluten-free cookies and give me the number to her masseuse next week. And that girl has a tight ass, I've been noticing. I texted the Russian a couple of weeks ago to rub my newfound dedication to working out in her skinny face. Me. I'm into Zumba now. It's super fun. The Russian. What is that? Some new thing you eat? Me. Dot, dot, dot. The Russian. Sounds fattening, whatever it is. Me. I hate you. Maybe I can just eat plants? I am a sucker for a headline screaming, "How I lost the weight and kept it off," or 200 pounds.